Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Lord Onyx, and all the hosts 7 nights a week for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics right here on Blog Talk Radio. Spiritual wellness and physical health with your hosts Robin A. McKean and Lisa Ripple. This show focuses on helping you integrate your spiritual wellness, your physical body, and your emotional health. We talk about fueling your soul and inner self, as well as the right food to fuel your body.
And now, here's Robin and Lisa.
Hello, everyone. We are having some technical difficulties, and we will try to get back with you here quickly. Seems like Blog Talk system itself is having some problems, so we will get in there ASAP. In the meantime, I am waiting when I can get this show on the road. We'll get back with you to you ASAP. Thanks a lot. Hang on. Welcome to Spiritual Wellness and Physical Health with your hosts Robin A. McKean and Lisa Ripple. This show focuses on helping you integrate your spiritual wellness, your physical body, and your emotional health. We talk about fueling your soul and inner self, as well as the right food to fuel your body.
And now, here's Robin and Lisa.
Hello, good evening. This is Robin McKean, and I am here
on spiritual wellness and physical health. We are live this evening, and I have my good friend with me, Nivasi, this evening. She's filling in for Lisa. I spoke to Lisa the other day, and she will be back. Not exactly sure when. She's still on the mend from her knee surgery. So any and all of you who were concerned about her, she's doing well. I just got to see her over the Thanksgiving weekend holiday. And Niv, are you with me?
I'm hoping I'm here.
Yes, I can hear you. Yay!
Yay! Yay! Something worked. I don't know what, but thank you.
I'm hoping we're broadcasting, though, because I have no idea.
I'm seeing it. The page itself, the chat room, hasn't launched, but I am seeing that we are live through the engineering eyes, but we're still out here, so let's go for it.
Okay. I think there's something I'm supposed to do to launch the chat room, but I cannot remember. Oh, there it is. Yep.
Yep, there it is up front. There you go.
Yep. Okay.
It may or may not work for you. I hope so. If not,
we'll
get through it.
Anyway, so this evening I thought we would just take some questions and answer them. It seems people always have questions about their path and how to move forward on it, and what things are good for them. One of the questions that I had submitted, I'm getting the 500 oops thing as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can't log into the chat room tonight, folks, don't be alarmed. It seems to be something going on with BTR. But we're here, and you can always listen in on the phone. And we can always, replay this episode at a later date if we have to. So anyway.
Yay.
Yeah. So one of the questions that I get frequently, people who are diagnosed with, say, an autoimmune disease or like diabetes or fibromyalgia or any of those, Crohn's disease, any of those
chronic
things, and do I think that there's any sort of way to improve their life? How can they fix it with, what can they do? And the one thing I always tell people to look at is what they eat. Food is medicine, and it's the first medicine.
I agree with you 100% on that one.
Mm-hmm. And, there's an old saying that says we are what we eat, which is so true. If you were sitting at your computer and you were feeding your computer corrupted, cheap, and faulty data, you wouldn't expect to get the best performance out of your computer. You would expect it to, spit back out what it gets put in. It's funny how we see machines that way. Also, same thing if you're doing an oil change on your car, you use the correct oil for your car. You wouldn't put, the wrong oil or cheap oil in your car if you want it to last. And in a lot of ways, our bodies are very much like the cars. We have an engine that has a metabolism that we have to, stoke the fire of the metabolism early in the morning with some good quality protein and get the body woken up and get it going. It's like warming up. You go out and it's cold outside, you turn your car and you let it warm up before you go anywhere. I know people who take such good care of their cars, but put crap into their body all day long. Yeah.
Yep, mm-hmm. They neglect it.
This is
a very true topic. I know a lot of people, not just myself, but others, who have type 2 diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
And endocrinologists will tell you exactly what you just said. You are what you eat. So if you don't take care of your intake, your pancreas will revolt and not work for you.
Yeah,
and this is what causes the type 2.
There are all kinds of things, I mean, that people can do. You know, diabetes definitely is related to food, but people don't think so much about other chronic immune disease. And, you know, diabetes is, type 2 is an immune, autoimmune disease,
yep.
just like fibromyalgia and Crohn's disease and a lot of these others, Epstein-Barr and a lot of these other boutique autoimmunes. So it all stems.
And they're nothing to fool around with, and they're to be taken very seriously.
Oh, absolutely.
And unfortunately, I'm seeing a lot of people, you know,
yeah.
it seems like I'm a little bit older than you, so I'll use me as the example. My age group is 50-plus. So our age group is very prone to type 2 diabetes because, A, we're not as active. Our kids are grown, so now we're not eating all that protein anymore. We tend to stay with our carbs. Now we've gotten into bad habits because we are not exercising, and we have to. We have to keep moving. So I have a lot of friends who have been diagnosed just recently with type 2 diabetes, and they can't understand why. Well, let me think here. You're not taking that morning walk like you used to with the kids walking down to the school bus, or you're taking the dogs for a walk because the weather's got cold and you're like, I'm cold, you know. Or you've gotten lazy. Now, I'm, for one, not a breakfast eater, but I will attempt to put some sort of protein in my mouth. I have to. If not, my glucose will shoot straight up and I'll be sick. So I know that we have to take care of our bodies regardless of our age group, and especially over 40. This is key. This is, you know, your eyes go bad over 40. Your body will go bad over 40. So, you know, definitely this protein thing and get moving. Move. So, you know, like I said, if your body's not being given the, you know, like you said, if your body's not given the correct things in the order you should be giving them, you're not going to get any better. If anything, you're going to get worse.
One of the things I always tell people who come to me and say, well, you know, I was just diagnosed with diabetes, type 2 diabetes, is when you get up in the morning, you've got to eat some kind of protein in the first half hour. You've got to eat because your blood sugar is at an all-time low. First thing you do is pee. Second thing you do, check your blood sugar when you wake up in the morning. See where you're at, and then go and eat some protein, a high-quality protein. If you like them, hard-boiled eggs or a fried egg or a poached egg or a scrambled egg, however you like it, eat it. Because eggs are good, although they've done some studies recently about people who eat a lot of eggs, linking that to diabetes, and I'm not exactly sure. I haven't read the study, but there's been a lot of conversation over the years about eggs and diabetes, and so you might want to, you know, take a good look at that. But eggs are considered.
I think that connects to those commercial eggs. There is definitely a study going on with free range and commercial eggs. Commercial eggs, you know, the bird just sits there and is force-fed, basically.
Right.
And free-range, of course, they're moving around like you and I should be, yet they get a combination of things. They get the additional protein, which passes through into their eggs.
Yeah.
So yes?
Yeah. My birds here are free-range. They eat all the bugs in the yard. We always had spiders. And when I say spiders, I mean there were so many spiders in the grass that when you would walk across the grass, you could see them scattering in front of you as you would walk through the grass. No more spiders. The birds have eaten them all.
Good.
Our chickens.
And now that the frost is laid in, now you got to feed them.
Well, I feed them anyway, but we always fed them, you know, their crumble. Their organic crumble is what we buy them. And then, but then they free range. Most days I let them out to wander, and they're funny because they know as soon as I wake up in the morning and they see me come outside, they're like, "Oh, she's gonna let us out! She's gonna let us out!" And there are days where I don't let them out, where if the weather is really bad or if it's super windy and cold, I won't let them out. But and then at night, as the sun starts to go down, they by themselves march themselves back into the coop, and all I have to do is go out there and shut the door. They're very cute.
Right. Yeah.
It's getting
they're
dark.
They're ready to go to the
room.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
It's dark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, there definitely is a study between the commercial eggs and the free-range eggs, in which
mm-hmm.
I'm all for the free-range. I've been pushing them. My sister-in-law raises
mm-hmm.
birds, and I've been bringing you guys eggs for years. I'm so glad you
mm-hmm.
got yours.
mm-hmm.
But there truly is a study that has been going along with commercial-grown birds, so to
mm-hmm.
speak, as opposed to the free range. The free range birds do have a lot more protein and a lot less, quote unquote, the bad cholesterol, where
yeah.
the commercial has a higher
mm-hmm.
Bad cholesterol. So, I mean, duh.
yeah.
Make the choice.
Mm-hmm.
Let me
mm-hmm.
think. Yeah.
Yep.
So it is very wise to go ahead to go with the free range.
Yeah, I will say that the eggs that our birds produce have a little bit stronger aroma and flavor than store-bought eggs, but I don't find it unpleasant. I actually kind of like it. It's like, wow, you know, super eggs. And the yolks
right.
are this bright orange. They're not yellow at all. They're this deep,
yeah.
bright
yeah, almost like
orange.
A duck egg.
Yeah, and they sit up, and the yolk sits up super high because they're so fresh. So it's a
right.
very different eating experience than it is to go to the store and buy, you know, farm fresh eggs from the store.
yeah.
There's nothing more fresh
normal
than going
egg.
Out into
yeah.
the yard and pulling the egg out from under the chicken and coming inside, washing it off, and cracking it in a pan. You know, there's just no nothing fresher
no
than that.
Mm-hmm.
No yep.
comparison whatsoever.
Yep.
But, you know, like we were discussing, the endocrinologist will flat tell you, you know, if you can go organic,
mm-hmm.
do it. Not just
yeah.
eggs.
Mm-hmm.
We have, I'm lucky enough to be able to get beef and, of course, chicken. And
mm-hmm.
if I really wanted to, I could get my pork as well.
Mm-hmm.
Going organic takes a little bit time, but once you've had an organic steak or organic burger,
mm-hmm.
And then you go store-bought,
yeah.
there's no comparison. The fat content
mm-hmm.
is absolutely weird. You feel like you can't cook it. It tastes a little bland.
Mm-hmm.
Like this year, we didn't take a cow in to slaughter to the butcher, but so I went and bought 5 pounds of burger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What a weird, yucky feeling in your hands.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't even look like beef.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely is a big difference, truly is a big difference. And there again, my physician has told me before to kind of like lay off of that because we don't
mm-hmm.
treat them with hormones
right.
at all. There's no
right.
artificial anything in our beef. If anything, they get free grass, you know, they get their grass, corn, everything that's grown on this farm, those cows eat. The dysfunction of that is your ammonia levels do go up, but it doesn't
mm-hmm.
affect anything else,
right.
which is absolutely fine. So, you know, you have to learn how to put everything in balance of what you put in your mouth. Absolutely.
Yep,
you just can't just lay back on a roast for a week, you know. You
mm-hmm.
just can't.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing that's super important that I have found personally amongst my clients and just in general, is trying to encourage people to eat food that is raw. And I don't mean raw meats, don't freak out, but produce, raw produce. Stop cooking all your vegetables. I mean, and it doesn't get easier, ladies out there, single moms who are always stressed about trying to cook. How hard is it to take a carrot out of the fridge, peel it, and cut it into slices and put it on the plate? It's not hard. While something else is cooking, you can be doing that, or a cucumber, or broccoli, or cauliflower. You know, give or just some spinach and some iceberg lettuce, and toss it together, and put it on the plate. It is so much easier than trying to get out the steamer in the pot and put them in and cook them just right. And you have to watch the vegetables because you don't want them to overcook. And then the kids won't eat them because, oh, they got overcooked, they're mushy, or they're not cooked enough, they're, you know, too hard, they're yucky. I have mastered the concept of, look, I slice the carrots really super thin, and I tell them that it's carrot chips, like potato chips, but carrot chips. And Persephone has loved those, and that way they're not too, like, hard for them to chew.
Yeah, I agree.
And cucumbers, I peel all my cucumbers. I never give kids cucumber skin because, A, they can choke, and, B, all the pesticides and crap. If you're not buying organic, all the pesticides and junk are on the outside.
The wax.
Exactly, that wax. Anything they put that wax on, I peel. Apples, never give an unpeeled apple to a child, ever. That wax is terrible for you. And same thing with cucumbers. If you're buying organic, then it doesn't matter as much. I just do it for the little kids so they don't choke on the skin because it's hard to chew.
Correct. It's hard to digest as well.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, when Persephone was little, she, really little, she, if I gave her cucumbers with the skin on, she would have what appeared to be like a sulfite reaction. Her cheeks would flush red, and she'd get itchy for a little while. And, you know, she'd feel hot to the touch. And I know that that can be like a sign of sulfite reaction. So I don't know if there are sulfites in that wax or not, but she had a sensitivity to it.
I would imagine there is.
Yeah, I would think so too, because it's to preserve them. So I would. That was actually why I started peeling the cucumbers. And then as I did more research into it, I realized there's a lot of yucky stuff in that wax, and it's not good for you. Not to mention the fact that it picks up a lot of dirt in transit, and hangs on to it. You know, having been with Jimmy, I used to go to the produce market in Philadelphia, where it comes in on the dock there. And I can tell you that the conditions there, if you could go there, you would never, ever not peel and or wash everything that goes to your table. There are people there who many times I was there and saw guys who work there urinating between the boxes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, that were just stacked up on the platform. So there's no way that I would not wash my vegetables when they come to me. And I don't even want to think about what else happens when they're still in the fields and everything being boxed up and whatever. So a few years ago they had that thing, what was it, with spinach? Or I think
spinach and the onions both, yeah.
Yeah. And they found actual, you know, fecal coliform on the spinach, which really shouldn't be, and it was pretty widespread, and it was because there was no sanitation in the fields where these people were picking the spinach, and so they had no choice, and it was making people sick all over the place. They had to recall a bunch of spinach. So be mindful that if you're not buying organic, and even if you are buying organic, still be sure to wash your produce when it comes to you. Yeah,
I have a brush that I use, and then after I've used it, and even this is stuff that we grow. My tomatoes, anything and everything that I can scrub down, I'm scrubbing down, and after I scrub it, I'm putting in salt water.
Yeah.
The salt water actually kills a lot of bacteria that people aren't really realize. And it's utmost importance because after I get done with my washing and my rinsing and the dry time, I'm going to be putting those in freezer bags. And like some of the Brussels sprouts that I have set up for you all that I got to take out there, those have all been soaked, and I mean for a long period of time, with a good half cup of water, or excuse me, half cup of salt, and 2 gallons of water. And it doesn't hurt it. A, it's going to run the bugs out. We don't use any pesticides, so that's no fear. But there's a lot of airborne stuff because, you know, we have the tractors that come through and we have other farmers in the area, and you don't know if they sprayed it. I know on our property there's no spray, but it's airborne, so
yeah,
I can't control all that.
That's so, just plus today there's so much air pollution from, like, cars and stuff. And
I know
there are guidelines as to how close farmers can plant crops to the road, but, you know, it's something ridiculously short, like 25 feet, I think, in Pennsylvania. So you can have a major highway, and 25 feet from the major highway with the runoff from the cars when it rains are crops that they're feeding people. You know, that's just amazing to me.
And I think it might be not just Pennsylvania. I think it's also county judged.
Mm-hmm.
There is a farm that I go to for fruit because my fruit trees aren't making yet. But, you know, I'll go out to a tree farm. And I've asked that question. Most of those trees aren't that close to the road. And that's the reason why you have to drive for miles to get out there to that orchard. It's because of the pollution, and I believe there is a restriction by the USDA that they have to be further off than what the state says you can be. But that's still a frightening thought. You know, like you said, the crap that comes out of your car and it's, you know, raining and it's flinging crap.
Petroleum product, antifreeze, you know, all the things that cars can leak. And just in general, the runoff from the rubber of the tires, and it's just, it's just not a great idea. So anyway, so big thing, wash your produce and eat raw. I tell my clients to try to eat on every plate at least 30% of that plate, which is really one item, raw. So if you're going to have a meat, a starch, and your vegetable, have your vegetable be raw. Another thing is, if you're a diabetic, instead of having a starch, two vegetables and a protein.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, starches are an issue. If you really, really, really are a carboholic, try to find carbs that are more low-carb. things like, well, for example, quinoa is a wonderful alternative because it really is a protein. It's a seed. It's not a starch, but it cooks like a starch. It cooks like couscous or rice in that, you know, you can flavor it with chicken bouillon when you cook it and you know, whatever other herbs and spices you want to make it taste like, just like we would with rice, flavor it a little bit. And it's not going to affect you in the same way. For those people out there listening who don't understand, let me just do a brief synopsis here. When you eat carbohydrates, especially really refined carbohydrates like white bread, white potatoes, any kind of white pasta.
White rice?
White rice, yeah. Although white rice, I think, is at the lower end of those other refined starches, but still brown rice is better than white rice.
Black rice is better than brown, but go ahead.
So any of those, anything that's white and a starch, your body takes that in and immediately provides it with an insulin response because your body looks at that and it thinks it's sugar. It doesn't see starch. You know, it sees it as sugar. It immediately converts it to sugar, so your insulin sort of spikes and it goes way, 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 way up. And you get this kind of insulin rush. And then you get that crash and your body crashes.
Yep.
And then your body says, wait, we really liked all that insulin. We want more carbs, and this is part of the reason that people crave carbs. You know, you ate some carbs, and like you find yourself 2 to 3 hours later going, oh, I'd really like another English muffin. Yeah, I really want another English muffin. And you find yourself every few hours wanting some kind of carb. And
because you're physically burning off as your body is eating it up.
That's right. So your body says, give me more. And you go back and you get this big insulin spike again. And, you know, insulin, part of what it does in your body is its main job is to help your body store fat. Okay, did you all hear that? Insulin
but it's a good
stores.
Fat.
Yeah, insulin stores fat, and the kind of fat that it stores is the deep layer subcutaneous in case of emergency starvation fat. This is not fat that your body goes, it's surface, you know, fat that your body goes, okay, well, we're going to lose a few pounds here. Not the easy to lose kind of fat. This is the kind of fat your body packs on because it's afraid you're going to starve to death in the future, okay? So your body starts packing on this fat, and your body is craving more and more insulin because you're feeding it more and more carbs. And it's like this vicious cycle. Not only do you go into this vicious cycle with this, but you become more susceptible to things like candidiasis, yeast in your blood, systemic yeast infection, which also feeds on those sugars from the carbohydrates and starts to run rampant in your body, and that causes other problems. There's leaky gut syndrome and chronic inflammation of all your joints. As I'm getting older, I'm beginning to realize that I have some joints that hurt my hips, my shoulder. Two winters ago, I gave up sugar entirely as an experiment. And I saw that after 2 weeks of not eating any sugar, all my aches and pains went away. And I was so much better, even still last winter. This winter, it's not even really cold here yet, and all my aches and pains are back. So I was just telling Terry, after Christmas, I'm giving up sugars and carbs again because I have so much discomfort. I mean, if I'm sitting, it hurts.
My hips are the worst.
Yeah, my hips. If I'm sitting, it hurts. If I'm standing, it hurts. If I lie down at night, it hurts. It's like a constant ache, and I'm going to have to do something about it. So I'm pretty sure that if I give up the sugars and the carbs, it'll go away. Because I drink more water. Well, yeah, that goes without saying. I do have a water issue. I need to always be drinking more water. And that is another important thing if you're going to try to balance your body with after diabetes, if you've been diagnosed, is to make sure you're getting enough hydration, enough water. Because another organ that's affected by diabetes is often the gallbladder. Because people who have a diabetes issue, their body's not processing food properly. So, and they have a tendency to have been eating a lot of fatty, difficult-to-digest foods. And so you'll find yourself with gallbladder attacks. And let me tell you something. I've had two in my life.
Oh, my God, they're horrible.
I thought I was having a heart attack. I made Jimmy take me to the hospital. I had one mild one when I was pregnant with Perry. And didn't realize what it was. I just thought, you know, I'm pregnant. I'm having this pain in my side. Maybe she's leaning on something. But in hindsight, it was a gallbladder issue. It was like the warning. It was the warning attack. And then shortly after she was born, I had another one where I really thought I was having a heart attack. I had such a horrible pain up under my right arm, you know, like penetrating into my chest and around my back. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, I'm having a heart attack.
And that's exactly what it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, people don't realize your insulin from your pancreas feeds into your gall, that little bladder thing, and then that helps it create its own bile.
Right.
And that would break down those hard to get rid of, quote unquote, fatty cells. Mm-hmm. And because your gallbladder is spitting out these little lumps of yuck that it can't process.
Right.
So it's spitting it out, and that's going to go through, you know, eventually go into your stomach. But if you don't have the correct insulin balance, like you said, that you feel like someone just stabbed you with a dull knife and twisted it 15,000 times.
Oh, it's
and
horrible.
It's all due to the it's a stone that's trying to pass through, and you don't have a very large duct there. That's why it's important to drink a lot of water to help your body keep it nourished that way, as well as that balancing of the insulin.
Yeah.
Knock on wood, I don't have to take that any meds anymore because I listen to my doctor. I'm still diabetic, don't get me wrong. I still know the signs. I still test, but I'm not on the medication any longer because I'm eating the way I'm supposed to be eating.
Right.
I have a friend that... Go ahead.
I was going to say, after I had that one attack, that was enough to cure me. And I have not had any gallbladder attack since because I control it with diet. And it was funny because people who listen have heard me say this before. I had gastric bypass 11 years ago. And it's very common for people who've had bypass to have gallbladder attacks and need to have the gallbladders removed. Because even though they've had the gastric bypass, a lot of the time they keep eating all the crap, but just in smaller portions and more frequently to defeat the surgery. I had that one attack, and that was enough for me. I was like, same thing with gout. When I was in my 30s, I had gout once in my big toe on my right foot. We were on vacation in Hilton Head, and I had been living it up. I had been eating pate and French breads and chocolates and, I mean, you name it. We had been eating like kings for several days. And one morning I woke up, and it really literally felt like somebody had hit my toe with a hammer in my sleep. And my toe was all shiny looking, and I'm like, oh, my God, I think I broke my toe, you know. We go to the doctor, and he's like, oh, no, you're not broken, it's gout. I'm like, what? I didn't think people had gout anymore.
you can get gout very
absolutely.
Easily.
So I immediately began drinking water and changing my diet. And, you know, so you have to, you know, it can happen to anybody. The thing is if it happens to you, learn from it and move forward and make changes so that it doesn't continue to happen. My mom had her gallbladder out. I have so many friends who've had their gallbladders out. I may ultimately still, I'm 53, I may still someday need to have my gallbladder out, but I'm doing the best I can to try to keep that from happening.
Avoid it like the plague. Because you have to relearn how to eat all over again.
Absolutely. Do I eat junk? Yeah, I do. Everybody, you know, occasionally eats junk. But if you try and eat about 80% clean on a daily basis so that you're eating, you know, your high-quality lean proteins. And I am a believer in people. The human body needs animal proteins. I personally don't think that people should be sitting down to huge slabs of steak at every meal. But I do think that every meal should include some kind of protein because it's so important. And we tend to think these days of, oh, well, you know, I'm going to just eat salads at every meal and I'll lose weight. The problem with that is you lose muscle because you're not getting all the B vitamins and all of the iron and things that you need to maintain your muscle mass. And you cannot lose fat without muscle. There was a wonderful, wonderful book I read years ago by a man named Colvert Bailey. Fit or Fat was the name of the book. Very small, thin book that explains the biomechanics of how your body deals with food, how it digests food, and what it needs in order to burn fat and stay healthy. I wholeheartedly recommend that you go out and look that book up. It explains it in easy-to-understand English. It's not a huge book. He's got recipes in the back. And I found it an invaluable source for myself. I learned so much from reading that little book. The more muscle mass you have, even at a resting state, the faster your metabolism burns fat. So if you're somebody who weighs 200 pounds and you've got a big beer belly and that 200 pounds is mostly fat, you could eat maybe half of a turkey sandwich and a side salad, and your body is going to maintain, and your body's not going to burn that food off. You could be 200 pounds of muscle like a linebacker for a football team and maybe even still have a little bit of a belly, but you've got a high muscle mass, and you might eat that same lunch and you'd be hungry in 2 hours because even if you weren't doing anything and you were sitting down at your desk doing the same thing that the 200-pound guy, other 200-pound guy was doing, the sedentary one, your body would be burning it at a higher rate. So, and especially for women, muscle mass is important because it helps. They've proven that if you do weightlifting exercises, it keeps your bones dense and it keeps you from losing calcium out of your bones. And prevents osteoporosis, which is a big thing for women. And you're right, I do see that it is 10:42. See, I could talk forever about this stuff.
I know. It's because this is about us, though. This is about not just us, you and I, but us as humans.
Well, yeah, and there's so much of this out there right now. I mean, there are so many people who are being told, one in three people in the United States today has diabetes or is in a pre-diabetic state.
Yes, absolutely.
One in three. And that statistic includes children, which is scary. One in three.
It is
children.
Scary.
And if you were born after the year 2005, statistically, they say your chances in your lifetime of being diabetic are 50-50.
Wow.
Which is ridiculous.
Well,
we are
back in the early 70s. Mm-hmm. I was pre-diabetic,
mm-hmm.
and I was able to control. And we controlled it for years just with
mm-hmm.
diet alone. But
mm-hmm.
you get lazy. You really
mm-hmm.
do.
Yeah.
You don't realize you are, but you do get lazy if you're not
mm-hmm.
out there burning it up every 10, 20, 30 minutes and doing some hard running or.
Mm-hmm.
You know, flopping around out in the yard with your kids,
mm-hmm.
swimming, do something. Because if
mm-hmm.
you don't, you'll end up like myself and many others
mm-hmm.
who every meal determines if you have to take that medication or not.
That's
how
right.
bad it is,
yeah.
you know.
So absolutely.
I would rather do without the meds.
Yeah, well, exactly. And I think that, you know, one of the statistics I wanted to quote quickly was that that statistic about diabetes is unique to the United States. The rest of the
right.
world is not having that kind of increase in diabetes. So that's something that we're doing here. The other thing is medications. People over 50 in the United States, something like 60% of people over 50 in the United States are on high blood pressure, diabetes, or cholesterol medication. Yeah.
Yep.
If you go to Canada, which is just our neighbor to the north, that same age group, it's more like 12% of the people are on those medications. That's a huge difference. Huge.
Yes, it is. It's huge.
So,
it is. And it's because of the laziness and I think mm-hmm. a lot of the availability of quick foods.
Yes.
And that's all they
absolutely.
Are, just quick foods.
Absolutely. And so what I tell my clients is when you go to the supermarket, stay out of the aisles with all the boxes and all the cans. Shop the
yep.
exterior of the supermarket, the produce aisle,
perimeter,
the meat
yep.
aisle, the dairy aisle, and stay out of all of those boxes and cans. You don't want to buy stuff that comes in a box or a can. Frozen vegetables are okay because, after all, we have to keep them. Just be careful how you cook them. But try to predominantly
okay.
eat raw vegetables. And, yes, you may have to go to the store more than once a week in order to do that. Raw fruits,
yeah,
raw
I
vegetables.
Freeze mine. I freeze
yeah.
mine, and I'm a firm believer of keeping them frozen.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was just going to tell you a bit ago, I have a friend that works at the food bank, and
mm-hmm.
she just called me up last night, and she says, what do you do? Because they don't have refrigeration. I mean, they have refrigeration, but they don't have freezing capability.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the day, after everyone has gotten, you know, people that need to use the additional food, the workers go home with the leftovers because they have
mm-hmm.
no freezer. So she
mm-hmm.
called me up and she says, what do you do with root food? And I could have, you know, I'm like, can I fly down to your house quick enough?
mm-hmm.
They were each person, there was 40 people in there last Thursday. Each person went home with 20 pounds of root shredded vegetables, and no one knows what to do with it. Oh, really? Let me tell you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
and so I told
her
a lot of different things, and she says, well, I never eat anything raw. And I went, oh, girl, you are missing out on the world of getting better and healthier.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? Or is anything wilted?
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to cook it all the way through. Just wilt it.
Exactly. Or just parboil it. I mean, you know, a couple of seconds in hot boiling water.
Steam it.
Yeah, exactly. The other advantage to eating raw food, when you eat raw food and you put it in your body and your body looks at the food and goes, oh, I know what to do with that. It's in its natural state. Our bodies have been eating this food in this raw state for millennia, okay?
Mm-hmm.
As long as we've been alive. Nuts, berries, vegetables, fruits. We know, our bodies know exactly what to do with all that stuff raw. Now, fire and cooking food in our evolutionary scale is really a rather new development. We've only been cooking foods for a couple centuries. And as far as our human development goes, that's like a blip in time. Some people's gastrointestinal tracts don't handle cooked food as well as others. Depends on their level of evolution, I guess. I happen to be one of those people who cannot eat any kind of meat really well cooked. I like my steak bloody red inside. If I get it anything more than, say, you know, like pink inside, I can't eat it because when I eat it, I will have agita for 3 days. It just makes me, my body doesn't like it. It finds it hard to digest. But if I eat very rare steak, I have absolutely no problems. Chicken is one of those things you have to cook all the way through in order to eat according to, you know, history. Otherwise, it can make you sick. But if it's, and I do cook it, chicken has to be cooked to a minimum temperature of 140 degrees inside, minimum, for white meat, 165 for dark meat. So with a thermometer, if anybody's wondering what that, where I'm getting that from, as a, you know, cooking thermometer. So if you follow that and you keep it to the 140, your chicken's going to come out moist but cooked. Anything much more than that, and I start to have I start personally to have trouble with chicken. Like, I cannot eat chicken in a restaurant because they cook everything to death. Not
that
to mention the fact that they inject
way to eat.
Yeah. Yep. And not to mention the fact that
it doesn't have any flavor anyway.
Well, what they do in most fast food restaurants and most restaurants in general, like if you go to Fridays or any of those national chains, what they do is they cook it to death so that nobody will get sick from their chicken. But then, in order to make it taste good and to have it be moist, the chicken is injected with flavored salt water. Basically, they put like bouillon or garlic-flavored salt water or some way so that when you cut it open at the table, oh, look how juicy it is. But it's not juicy because the chicken was cooked properly. It's juicy because they injected, you know, salt, basically more salt into it. I think in the news you're going to see an awful lot of conversation here coming up about salt content. New York City just had a thing this past week about trying to control salt content and making restaurants label the amount of salt in certain foods. Anything above,
and they should also.
Thing.
And the problem is though the salt. A lot of people tend to use in restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
What is that salt? Starts with a K. Can't get work with me here. It's a salt that. Oh. Anyways, this particular salt does not have iodine in it.
Right.
And we need that. Even though our bodies don't store
iodine. You mean kosher salt?
Kosher salt. Kosher salt does not have iodine in it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know, and I've used a lot over the last few months. Seems like this SO here has been really craving a lot of salt because his blood pressure has always been up. So I stopped using that and went back to the good old Morton salt with iodine.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He was complaining about aches and pains. Man, my shoulders are really hurting, and he's in construction. I'm thinking, well, maybe you did something. You know, maybe you twisted it wrong. And then I got to thinking, wait a minute. He's been using that box salt, and that's what I use for canning.
Mm-hmm.
I hit that box. Oh, we're out. Darn. But I just bought, I don't know where it is. I lied like a big dog because there's no iodine inserted in kosher salt.
Right.
Our bodies need iodine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like the iodine that you put in on boo-boos. It's not that kind of iodine. It's the, mm-hmm. the natural iodine, ionized
right.
is what they're calling
right.
it. It needs to be, you need to have that.
Mm-hmm.
There again, you'll have the aches and pains. You'll think, you know, what did I do to my knee? I can't get up out of the chair without
mm-hmm.
it hurting. You start using the ionized or iodine salt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Those aches and pains will disappear.
Yeah.
I promise you that.
I was going to say, tell Brian to cut back on his intake of sugar. It might help him, too. But anyway.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, you can replace it with other things. When people say, I'm going to eliminate sugar, people are all of a sudden like, oh, my God, I'll never have anything sweet again. But, no, you can still use honey. You can still use coconut sugar, which they basically derive from coconut milk.
Agave.
And it's agave. But you have to be careful, because if you don't get a good organic brand of agave, there's been some corn syrup sneaking into agaves.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to be real careful and read the ingredients and make sure you're getting like blue agave, 100% organic blue agave. And the same thing goes for honey. You've got to watch. A lot of honeys today are being corrupted with corn syrup.
Correct.
And try to stay away from corn syrup. Oh my gosh, it's so bad for you. I mean, you know, first of all, the corn that they use to make corn syrup is genetically modified.
Every box of food,
yes.
every anything
partially,
that's quote-unquote sweetened.
Yes. Partially hydrogenated oils and corn syrup, if we could eliminate those two things from all the processed foods that are out there, America would be so much healthier. Those two things, I think, are huge, huge culprits to the downfall. The fat-free movement in the 80s really... we screwed ourselves over because we started adding all this sugar and all this salt, and they started adding sugar in the form of corn syrups into a lot of things because it's cheap and it's easily made in this country because we grow so much corn. And then Monsanto went to work and genetically modified the corn as well. And I mean, it's just making us sick. And, you know, one of the things that really just, yeah, one of the things I don't understand as a mother, you look at companies like Kellogg's and General Mills who make all these cereals that we feed our kids every day. And if you let your kid go to school in the morning and have breakfast at school, they're giving them cereals like Fruit Loops and you know, Lucky Charms
and stuff like that. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And they are
and
those
I tell you, and
are,
this is what irks me as well. Not just the school systems. I mean, this is all under the FDA.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
you know,
absolutely.
Requirements. What's another
Absolutely.
Thing that's the worst is people that are on medical assistance and they have food stamps.
Mm-hmm.
Not medical assistance, food stamps.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at, you have to be so much smarter than the system.
Mm-hmm.
Those food stamps will buy those boxed foods.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have grandchildren that are old enough to be on that, so
mm-hmm.
I am constantly telling, you know, they're a young couple. They're just starting out. The formula, my great-grandson had an absolutely ungodly reaction due to, get this, sugar in the formula.
Mm-hmm.
He just was not, he just got deathly ill, and they couldn't figure out, So they came here, and... bless her heart, she looked at me, she goes, I don't know what's wrong. Every time I feed him, he throws up. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I marched down to my neighbor's. I went and got as fresh as milk as you can get. Yes, we diluted it. Yes, it had been pasteurized. But we gave him that. Guess who didn't get sick?
Yeah.
And, you know, yes, technically he's not supposed to have anything other than, but another thing, this child cannot tolerate sugar in his milk.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to really looking at the side of the can, and I went, what are these long words? What?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
this is not supposed to be in my children's milk, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She was just one of those ones that could not breastfeed. So I'm looking at all this crap on the side, and I'm like, what is this crap? You know, and I'm typing it in just to see what it is, and it's amazingly crazy
mm-hmm.
that most of the stuff is sugar.
Yeah, a lot of sugar. A lot of the breast milk formulas, again, contain genetically modified cornstarch, genetically modified soy. 80% of all soy and corn that's grown in the United States are genetically modified. I cannot implore mothers more out there. It is so important these days to breastfeed, not only from the standpoint of immune disease, because you're passing the immunities to your children and giving them the best start you can, but the DHA that they talk about, oh, there's DHA in these formulas. You know what? The reason they say that on the label is because that's what's in breast milk. That's what's going to make your baby's brain develop properly. And that's why it's important. And they cannot synthesize it at a high enough quality in breast milk, in formula, to equal that of breast milk. They've done studies. Children who are breastfed grow up to be smarter and have higher IQs than children who are just fed formula and who are never breastfed. And it is statistically borne out again and again and again. And I'm not trying to sound like a snob, and I know there are some women who just can't wrap their heads around the breastfeeding. It just won't work. The baby won't latch on. I get that.
Go to the hospital. There's La Leche programs running out the ears.
Programs, absolutely. The lactation specialists should be at bedside of every woman who has a newborn in every hospital. I know I had one in the hospital in New Jersey when Persephone was born. She was easy. She, you know, took right to it, so it wasn't a big deal. But I know I have had friends. And also there's the whole uncomfortableness issue. Some women feel like, oh, well, you know, my breasts are like a sexual organ, and I feel creepy about having my kid, you know, doing that. No, we have it backwards. You know, when you look at kittens nursing, you know, when you look at kittens nursing, you know, at their mother's teats, I mean, does that freak you out? Because that's exactly the same context. That's what our breasts are for. Not some sex organ to please the boyfriend or the husband, or, you know, to sell cars. You know, it's to feed our children. And in other countries, it is commonplace for women to breastfeed their children until they're 5 years old. We are one of the few countries. Yeah, we're one of the few countries in the world that feels like, oh, you only need to breastfeed for 3 or 4 weeks. I know lots of women who think, like, after a month, you don't have to breastfeed anymore. I'm like, no. I mean, I breastfed Perry till she was 3. And let me tell you something. I got such flack from people about it. Oh, my God, she's 2 years old and you're still breastfeeding her. Well, yeah. And part of the reason I did it for as long as I did, again, wildly against everybody in my life, was because her father had Crohn's disease, which is an autoimmune, and I thought, I'm going to do the best thing I can for my daughter and give her as much of this as I can, because that's the best thing I can do for her. Does she occasionally seem like she might have symptoms? Yeah, she does. But if I make sure she's eating clean and eating well, then she has no symptoms. It is definitely food-related. I have it in my own life. I see it every single day. It is actually 11 o'clock as we speak. I have way more to talk about on this issue. I know the hour flew by and we didn't really take a break, but I'm sure Terry can fix that when he remixes the show for us later. Any last things that you'd like to say? I know we covered an awful lot tonight talking about this. We may have to rename this show as, you know, autoimmune diseases and diabetes and...
I think a lot of, you know, the main important thing is, you know, you are what you eat. And if you don't put in the right vitamins and protein in your body, mm-hmm. you will fail.
Mm-hmm.
Your body will not work for you. It will not function properly. You won't be able to think correctly. I know when my glucose is dropping, you know, after I've spiked and it drops, I can't, I'm A, mean and nasty, or I might say something that I really can't control because I hurt. It all has to do with what goes into your body.
Mm-hmm.
I chuckled earlier and I said, yeah, I was naughty and I thought about, I ate a piece of cheesecake, but mm-hmm. I also felt it 45 minutes later and I had to go lay down.
Mm-hmm.
It's granted, we have, if you take all those sugars away, and then you, you know, pack it on and like a piece of cheesecake, believe me,
mm-hmm.
it was divine, but I also
mm-hmm.
felt it.
Oh, yeah.
We
yeah,
have
I have the same problem
care
if
of
I,
our body.
Yep, yep, absolutely. And, you know, this is funny because, as I said before, people will go to such great lengths to take care of their things, their cars,
mm-hmm.
you know. They'll wax and polish and clean the inside of their car, and they'll make sure their car has the best oil and gets a tune-up regularly and an oil change regularly. You know, make sure the brakes are done and the tires are new. But they don't treat their bodies the same way.
Right.
For a short period, a while ago, I was dating a gentleman who was a mechanic. And it came time to do an oil change on my car. And he said, well, you know, I'm going to buy the cheap oil. I'm going to buy the expensive oil for your car because, you know, it's a fairly newish car.
The synthetic oils, yeah. That's the one that they tend to want to use.
Yeah, no, but he didn't want the synthetic oil, but he wanted the good weight oil, the heavier weight for winter, and it was going to be much better into the car and blah, 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 blah. So we had this big, long conversation about how he's going to spend extra money on the car because it's worth it, and, you know, the oil and blah, blah, blah. I'm, okay, fine, just buy the more expensive oil. It's fine here. You know, here's the money, whatever. And not but 2 days later, we had this big conversation about food. We were in the supermarket, and I wanted to buy organic beef, but it was more expensive. And he's like, oh, don't you buy that. That's too expensive. We can't afford that, blah, blah, blah. I said, wait a minute. Wait just a minute. Yeah, we're buying the expensive oil for the car, but for your own body, you won't put in as good a quality as you can possibly buy. But it's okay for the car,
right,
but not for your body.
Yeah.
Car's replaceable,
yeah.
Body not so much. And he just stood there and looked at me like, oh, yeah, okay, I get it now. So sometimes that's what it takes. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Sometimes that's what it takes. So I know, I am not certainly rich. I live on a very limited income. And I'm not telling everybody they should go out and spend all kinds of money on all organic foods. But there are certain things that are really important. Familiarize yourself with what vegetables and fruits are important to buy organic and target those. Anything where they can spray on, anything that's genetically modified, like, you know, the FDA approved genetically modified salmon to come on the market now. Nobody.
Yeah, I read that. I hit the ceiling on that one.
Yeah,
and they don't have to market
this online.
And they do not have to say any. They don't have to label it
when
you go to purchase it either. Which is
that's right.
That crosses the line for me. I'm sorry, and
mm-hmm.
I can't. I'm not comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not.
So one of the things I do is I tell people if you really want to eat salmon, make sure you buy salmon that says it's wild caught. Ask questions when you go to the supermarket, and if they can't answer the questions properly, don't buy it. If they can't tell you where it came from, don't buy it. Start asking.
I go to the fish
market
down in Pittsburgh. And
mm-hmm.
I have already questioned them, and they said they can't tell the difference at
mm-hmm.
the fish market.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the big importers here in Pittsburgh of
mm-hmm.
all the quote-unquote seafood, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And when I asked the question, because most of their salmon was coming from up north, now it's going to start coming from a farm,
mm-hmm.
Like the catfish. I won't buy
mm-hmm.
catfish from any store.
I won't buy farm raised.
I know that it's,
mm-hmm.
no,
yep.
because it's packed full of corn and dog
mm-hmm.
food, and I'm
yeah.
not going to eat it.
Yeah. The local supermarket here has to put signs, I don't know why, but they have to put signs on and at least tell you whether it's farm raised or wild caught. And if the sign's not on the fish, I ask. But the Weiss
right.
here is very good about doing that. One of the things about salmon is you can usually tell farm-raised salmon from wild-caught because unless it's sockeye salmon, which is a specific breed of salmon, which is wild salmon and very expensive. You're going to pay like, I don't know, here I would pay like $16 a pound for that, for sockeye, if not more. Very orange in color, but that's natural. If you look
right.
at regular Atlantic salmon, it's going to be sort of a palish, corally color. Now,
yeah, more orange than pink.
Right. When you look at the farm-raised salmon, they can't get that natural salmon color, so they have to dye it. They inject the fish with dye. This has been going on for a long time. And so the color is a little bit more brilliant than it should be. And when you look at the fish side by side in the case, you can see it. You'll be like, oh, how come that stuff's so, you know, orangey looking? And you'll inevitably see that if you ask, if it's not labeled, that it's farm-raised. So that's sort of a hint, because obviously if they're farm-raising this genetically modified salmon, they're going to have to also inject that with
right, otherwise
with
it's
color.
Just going to be either slightly white or off-white.
Yes.
Like
yes.
catfish. Catfish
right.
has, wild catfish has a brown or a browny green sort of
or sometimes
on
even
the,
a grayish tint
on the outer
yeah.
skin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just their natural coloring and coating.
Mm-hmm.
But when you buy catfish that is farm raised, and I had mm-hmm. family that did it, but they will tell you up front, don't buy this.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know what they feed it. They feed
mm-hmm.
them corn. They feed them
mm-hmm.
popcorn, like you would not believe. All that stuff in the, if it's cycled correctly, all that popcorn that you didn't eat at the movie theater goes
mm-hmm.
to these fish farms.
Mm-hmm.
Also, they feed them dog food.
Yeah.
What's in dog food? Crap.
Mm-hmm.
Are you
yeah,
kidding
yeah.
me? And you're expecting me to eat this? I don't
mm-hmm.
think so. So
mm-hmm.
there's a certain color to your fish, and educate yourself. There's no
mm-hmm.
reason why you shouldn't.
Yeah.
And again, if they can't answer that question, don't buy it.
Yeah.
If it smells funny, don't buy it. If it smells
mm-hmm.
fishy, don't buy it.
Yeah, and if you're buying a whole fish, which is one of the things I also try to encourage people to do, is to buy whole foods, and fish is one of those foods we can really do that with. You can buy a whole fish.
Yeah.
Make sure that the eye is nice and clear and looks fresh. It isn't cloudy. If the
it's
fish
like a marble,
eye is
yeah.
yeah yeah if the fish eye is cloudy in any way, do not buy the fish. It's too old. The one thing you do want, and people don't understand this frequently when I tell them, is when you talk to your fishmonger, find out, was the fish frozen right after it was caught? Because a lot of the commercial
yeah,
fishermen now, the minute they pull it out of the water, they freeze it. And that's what you want, because otherwise it's been sitting unfrozen for a week before it gets to your fish market. So
yeah.
you don't want that. I used to have a really good fishmonger that when I lived in Keyport, New Jersey, Keyport Fishery. I don't know if it's still there. I haven't been back there in years, but the older gentleman who owned it was just brilliant, and he taught me so much about fish. And he told me, you know, when you see fish that has come from China, China does not flash freeze their fish on the boat. Don't buy fish from China, because they just have
right.
it in the hull of their boat, and it sits in the heat of the hull of the boat for like 3 days until they get back to port, and then it's like another 3 or 4 days before it makes it to market. So you don't want
right.
that. And other parts of Indonesia, they do the same thing. So if you can get
even Japan as just
mm-hmm.
does the same thing.
Yeah.
Those fish is a vital part of a lot of us quote unquote coast people. You know,
mm-hmm.
I grew up in Houston and we had a lot of seafood available
mm-hmm.
to us. It's really important though that people that live around the Great Lakes also
mm-hmm.
ask those questions, because those are
mm-hmm.
fished as well. It's
yeah.
really important to know your fishmonger, and it's also
mm-hmm.
important to know what signs to look for
yeah.
when you're looking at your fish products.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Not just oysters and clams and,
mm-hmm.
you know, okay, so now people are now getting into crawfish, which was a major food source for us
mm-hmm.
growing up. It was poor folks' steak. now people don't understand all those crawfish are quote unquote crayfish. That mm-hmm. they're the lobsters without pinchers.
Mm-hmm.
The freshwater lobsters,
right.
what they're calling them now.
Mm-hmm.
All that's coming from down south.
Mm-hmm.
They're not a common thing here up north. North
no.
of the Mason-Dixon line, we'll say. So you have to ask your guy, how long has that been frozen?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has to be frozen. Because if you don't, I mean, you're looking at, you know, like from here to Houston is 2,000 miles. From Pittsburgh
mm-hmm.
to Houston is roughly 1,800 miles. Okay, are you going to get in your car and drive 20-something hours without ice? No, you would not.
Mm-hmm.
So why would you expect your fishmonger or importer not
right.
to keep
right.
them ice
right.
down?
So yep. So if the fish should be frozen on the boats, so that by the time they bring it to market, all they have to do is thaw some of it out and put it on the ice, and you can buy it. Problem is, though, that if you refreeze it when you get it home, sometimes it can alter the flavor. And it won't taste very good. And I think that's a lot of the
it's
time
tougher.
When people say, yeah, that's why a lot of people say, oh, I don't like fish. Well, it's because
right.
you're not taking care of it properly. You buy fish generally on the day that you're going to cook it. And this is just one of those things. I know it sounds terribly inconvenient. Or don't buy it thawed out. Go to the supermarket freezer or your fishmonger's freezer and just buy it frozen and maintain it frozen until you're ready to cook it. You know, we always feel like, oh, we have to go to the fishmonger and buy the you know, the fresh-looking fish that's defrosted, because you don't want to buy that frozen stuff. Well, the secret is that all they do is when they get that frozen fish, right, they defrost it and put it on the ice. Also, oftentimes, specifically, like with shrimp, if you go to the freezer section in the market, you can buy the same shrimp that they have on ice, exactly, usually for a dollar less a pound. But
right.
it's still frozen, which means it's still like flash frozen from the ship when they bought it, when they caught it, and it hasn't been defrosted. So you can take that home and just stick it right in the freezer for whenever night you're going to have shrimp. But if you buy the stuff that's been thawed and you take it home and you refreeze it, it's not going to taste as good. It's just not.
It's not going to taste good. It's not going to feel good texture-wise in your hand.
Yeah.
It's definitely not going to be a good texture in your mouth.
Yeah. Yeah. You know how sometimes when you're peeling the shrimp, they get that kind of mushed, you know, that's from being refrozen. It's like, oh, this is like mushy. And yeah, that's not very appetizing. But okay, anyway, it's almost a quarter after 11. We really should say goodnight. And,
yeah, you think.
yeah, maybe we'll continue this topic next show, next
sure.
Monday night. All right, everybody, have a great week. It's been fun. I always love talking to Niv. And in case anybody's wondering, I'm a holistic health coach, and Niv, I know you're a nurse. So we're not just sort of...
I was a nurse. I was a licensed RN for many, many years, but no longer.
Well, okay. You were a nurse. You're retired. So when we speak about these things, we kind of actually have some education to back it up. We're not just a couple of chicks on the radio who are spousing our opinions. These are things
we actually have training.
Yes, exactly. So these are things that we know about. So any questions about anything that we talked about tonight? Anybody have anything that they'd like to suggest? Topics they'd like to hear us talk about, please feel free to write to us at cern.org@gmail.com. Is that the right address?
Yep, that's the right one. Yep.
Okay.
Good girl.
That one always sounds so confusing to me. I don't know why, but that's
it
the uniqueness at the
it
radio
really
station.
Does.
If you'd like to reach me personally, you can email me at littlestonebridge@gmail.com. You can also get in touch with me on my Facebook page at Robin A. McKean, or my Facebook page for Spiritual Wellness Physical Health, or my Facebook page for Little Stone Bridge Pathworkings. Any of those will work. If you'd like to get in touch with Niv, write to the radio station at that cern.org@gmail.com address. And
yes.
I can get that to her. And if you have any questions or suggestions or anything, We look forward to hearing your comments. All right, and I would like to say goodnight. Say goodnight, Gracie. Say goodnight, Niv.
Good night. At least we weren't car neck tonight, and that's a joke
that's
for
right.
you and I.
That's right. That's right. And I'd like to bid everybody a nice evening, and as always, spread the love. Good night and blessed be.
Good night and blessed be.
Now I have to find the sign off.
It's there. It's there. I promise you.
Let's see.
I know. We need to reorganize that.
Oh, it's so. And tonight it's being very weird. The rejoin, I see. Rebroadcast. Oh, I
look under.
See it.
Look, SWPH should be an exit.
I see.
Sign off.
I see the intro. And the rejoin, I do not see. Oh, SWPH play. I don't.
Yeah,
I
need to get in there and or get Terry in there and re.
Yeah, I'm not seeing
those.
The closer. So I'm not going to play the closer. We're just going to hang up because I cannot find it.
All right. All right. We'll do that.
You can add it on next time. So.
All righty.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Good night.